The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hey there! You're listening to Sci-Fi Wire's 22 Days of Marvel. On today's episode, we're talking about Ant-Man and the Wasp. Stay tuned! Hey everyone, and welcome to Sci-Fi Wire's 22 Days of Marvel podcast. I'm today's moderator, Jordan Zacharin. I'm the features editor here at Sci-Fi Wire, and I am joined by two good people, two good humans. Two Marvel-loving good humans.
Aww,
Caitlin Bush,
yeah.
She's the associate editor here for Features, and Brian Silliman, who is in the middle of watching every single Marvel MCU movie because...
Slowly losing his mind.
Yeah.
Not so slowly anymore.
Brian's a very frequent contributor here at Sci-Fi Wire, and so we are counting down to the release of Avengers Endgame by revisiting all of the movies of the Marvel Cinematic Universe one day at a time. On this podcast, each day we're tackling a different movie, re-exploring the plot, calling out the best scenes and dialogue, and most importantly, because it's all about Easter eggs, tracking down all the connections across these 22 movies and what clues they give us to a hint. What happens in Avengers Endgame? We still have not seen it. I can't believe I'm actually going to see that movie. It's like blows my mind that I will get to see it.
I've kind of come up with this idea that it doesn't exist. It's right. All just a mass hallucination that we're all going through.
Or just like a giant, the world's smartest marketing scheme. Anyways. Finally, what makes this podcast most exciting is us, our hosts. You guys already know that because we've been very charming already. We are all massive fans of the MCU here at Sci-Fi Wire. So this podcast, you've listened to many other episodes before, you don't always get me. You don't always get Caitlin. You don't always get Brian. It's a rotating cast of Sci-Fi Wire staff, some you've heard before and some that are new to you. And isn't that great? Discovering new friends. So we're going to geek out from the inner circle of Sci-Fi Wire HQ straight to the podcast platform of your choice. Maybe it's iTunes, maybe it's Spotify, maybe it's some other podcast platform. I don't know. I'm not very good with tech. Guys, Ant-Man and the Wasp, fun movie, right?
Fun movie.
Fun and necessary.
Yes,
after
right?
What came right before it.
Exactly.
It was, thank God.
You really cued me up good there, Brian, because we're going to talk about the state of the MCU. That's my job right now. So leading up to the Ant-Man and the Wasp. It could be, but it's not. Once again, the Ant-Man movie follows the big blowout Avengers blockbuster. And the first Ant-Man followed, Age of Ultron. And this time, even crazier, it follows Avengers Infinity War. But, most of it takes place before those events.
Gasp.
So, it mostly takes place before Avengers Infinity War. So the state of the MCU is at first fine and dandy, relatively speaking, and then everyone goes to hell or into an infinite abyss, whichever way you want to look at with whatever Thanos' snap did. We're going to find out soon. I still haven't seen Endgame, but regardless, at the end of Ant-Man and the Wasp, which we'll talk about, the state of the MCU is very different. But let's talk about the beginning of Ant-Man and the Wasp. Let's track it down. We are going to do a breakdown of the whole plot. But before we do that, we gotta reintroduce what's becoming. I think of him as an old friend at this point. He's done so many podcasts with us. Our good pal Warvis.
Warvis
is going to recap the entire MCU up until this point. Going to tell us what's happened, who's dead, who's alive, what the deal is. Warvis, let's hear it.
Evangeline Lilly's character, Hope Van Dyne, obviously plays a much bigger role in this movie, so it's important to remember that in the mid-credit scene in Ant-Man 1, Hank Pym showed her a Wasp prototype suit, which he offered to her. At the start of Ant-Man and the Wasp, Scott Lang has been placed on house arrest due to his involvement with the Avengers in violation of the Sokovia Accords. It's also mentioned that Hope's mother was lost in the Quantum Realm years ago and hasn't been seen since. She is presumed dead.
All right, now it's time to break down the plot of Ant-Man and the Wasp, another heist movie of, I feel like it's even more fast-paced than the original Ant-Man. So, look, the movie begins actually way back in the past with a voiceover by Hank Pym, Michael Douglas, explaining more about what he told Hope at the near the end of the first Ant-Man. So Hank and his wife Janet, as they were in their tiny suits trying to stop a missile, when Janet went all in, when Subatomic hopped into the quantum realm, seems to have sacrificed herself to stop the nuclear missile. So he's been alone with Hope, his daughter, now played by Evangeline Lilly, ever since. Unsure if his boo is dead or still alive, floating somewhere in the flat time zone of Subatomic Realm. Meanwhile, Scott cannot stop getting in trouble with the law. You know, he was in Captain America's Civil War. They caught Scott and they gave him house arrest. And so he can't leave his home for 2 years. And we catch him at the very tail end of this house arrest. And he hasn't been in touch with either Hank or Hope because it's illegal for them to talk because they're fugitives. And also they hate his guts because he stole the suit and went to work with Captain America. The thing is, he has a dream about Janet. He's just going to finish his house arrest. He's hanging out with his ex-wife, Judy Greer, hanging out with his daughter, Cassie. He's hanging out with the cop who's now married, maybe-ish, to Judy Greer. I call him Bobby Spaghetti. His name is Bobby Cannavale, actually, as it turns out. Things are going well, right? He's living not his own home, but things are going okay. But he has this dream of Janet, who is the mother of, she's the woman. She's the first Wasp.
Played by a young Michelle Pfeiffer.
Mm-hmm. A de-aged Michelle Pfeiffer. And so he's like, oh, God, I saw her in my dream. I know this is a big deal. I'm going to give them a call. I'm going to give Hank and Hope a call. They said, all right, fine, we're going to meet with you. Turns out they've been monitoring him anyways, including his bathroom usage. So turns out that Scott is connected to Janet. He's like her tethered, kind of, in this real world. And so Hank and Hope are like, all right, we're gonna work with them again. So they stage a kidnapping so that it doesn't look like Scott reached out to them. So Randall Park plays the FBI agent who's been watching Scott. He's a real dummy, doesn't understand magic, but so he doesn't get suspicious. Take his ankle monitor off and everything. They decide that they're going to build a tunnel to the quantum realm, which is kind of like an advanced stairway to heaven. But they need a high-tech part, so they meet up with this guy, Sonny Birch, who's played by Walton Goggins at his smarmiest. He is so great in this movie. I love him. Walton Goggins, I will always love. So Hope has been posing as some Southern woman, but Sonny learns her real deal and starts to extort her. After a fun action scene, he steals Hank's miniature lab. They just walk around with their lab in like a suitcase size, which is pretty funny. At this point, they also encounter a ghost-type quantum character played by Hannah John Kamen, who is the star of Sci-Fi's own show, Killjoys.
She's fantastic in this.
Yeah, she's great. She is. And she keeps disappearing because like her body's going to disintegrate or something. Anyways, they got to go hide out with Scott's buddies because they are on the run, and they've started their own home security system company, which is great. How great is that scene?
It is the truth serum, everything about that.
Right.
The day that I actually get to have my own truth serum that isn't a truth serum is the day that I take over the world.
I also love how much Michael Pena's character is now super obsessed with the bottom line now that he runs a business. You know, the business is flailing and
He doesn't want expensive desserts.
Right, yeah.
And he's very, you know, when they do the undercarriage of a car, he thinks that's too much.
It's very funny to see him be very upset about...
He's the responsible dad now of
yeah.
this group of absolute criminals. Lovable criminals, but criminals.
They're trying to go legit, though.
They are.
It's just so hard in the system. You know, like the last time we spoke about Ant-Man, he can't even keep a job at Baskin-Robbins.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Right? So it's like, the system is stacked against ex-cons who are trying to make good. That's what I'm going to say. That's the political point of this movie. Anyways, so they're hiding out with his buddies when they're talking about the new home security system. They go to meet up with Bill Foster, who is Hank's old partner-turned-enemy, played by Lawrence Fishburne. They're old rivals. You can tell there's some kind of love, some rivalry there. What I really like about this scene, we can break down this scene a little bit. Scott is so competitive. He's got this ego now, right?
Mm.
He's pissed off that Hope has wings. You know, he's like,
right.
Oh, you didn't have wings when you did. We made my suit. He's like, no, we did.
No, we did.
Yeah,
I just didn't want to give them to you.
And then he does this a little bit of a pissing match with Bill about how big Giant Man can get.
How big did you get?
My record, 21 feet.
Not bad.
You? No, really, I'm curious.
65 feet.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Huge.
65.
If you two are finished comparing sizes, we need to figure out a way to track down the lab.
Who? And there is a bit of an Easter egg in which he reveals that their thing was called Project Goliath, which is actually who he is playing in from the comics is Goliath.
Right. Yeah. So thank you for that.
Yeah.
Thank you for pointing that out.
Happy to help.
Yeah.
I'm happy to help.
Yeah. So Lawrence Fishburne turns out he's working with the ghost lady who's actually named Ava, Hannah John Kamen, actually named Ava in this movie. And her parents were killed by some experiments that on Hank's stuff. Because Lawrence Fishburne got fired and Hank did him dirty. Hank did him dirty, wouldn't you say?
Hank does everyone dirty. Hank's a dick.
Yeah, it was like Lawrence Fishburne took in Ava after Ava's father like screwed an experiment with Hank's stuff or whatever, and Hank said that guy was dirty, but nobody really believes Hank anymore.
Right.
Nobody believes him. So he said, well, her father was a jerk. But.
Right, yeah. It's tough because I guess Hank is, it's weird, we keep finding out these people are worse and worse and worse than we had realized. It's kind of like Odin, right? In the other, in like Thor movies, you're like, wow, he's terrible.
Right. I mean, they have layers, granted. But most of them are bad layers.
I feel like the message of the MCU is that don't trust old people.
I trust Hank more than Odin.
Okay, sure. But Hank has less power.
Fair.
Isn't that wild that Michael Douglas and Anthony Hopkins are like have prominent roles in the MCU?
They're both dads.
Yeah, but still, they're prominent roles.
Sure.
Probably won't see Hopkins again, but hopefully we'll see Douglas.
That's true. One of the best scenes in the movie comes next. Thanks to Luis's incompetence, Scott winds up in Cassie's school in a new suit, looking for his old one. He put his little suit in Cassie's trophy, World's Best Grandma trophy.
World's Best Grandma, the best prize that one can possibly receive.
Yeah, Cassie takes it to school for show and tell because she loves her dad too much. It's creepy. Stop
it,
Cassie.
No, she loves her dad. Don't make it weird. You thinking that it's weird is making it weird.
I mean, I'm not saying it's weird in any sort of like weird pervy sense. It's just like, stop being so obsessed with your dad. You're growing up, kid.
He's a cool dad.
Yeah, he's Paul Rudd.
Yeah, that's
Paul
true.
Paul Rudd.
Yeah, I don't know. Uncomfortable,
but anyway,
parents
yeah.
have a place.
She steals the little trophy.
How great is this scene when he's in his prototype suit and just keeps getting bigger and smaller and bigger and smaller,
and he eventually ends up child sized. Yeah.
And the hall monitor thinks he's a child. He's asking to see his pass, and then he just walks away, and the guy's just like, oh, all right, and he just doesn't care.
I feel like he's not even
flopping around in an oversized hoodie.
He's like the size of a big cat. Almost. Not like a lion, but like a large house cat.
A kindergartner.
Yeah, he's tiny chimp.
Smaller than a hobbit, and like he barely fits in a hoodie.
That's the best way to describe it.
Laughing through the intercom at him the whole time.
Because he can't even reach up to the top of the cubbies.
Yeah. Hope has to help him.
Yeah.
And she has that great retort. It's like, oh, what would Cap think if he could see you now?
You know what I loved? I love when Hank says to him,
you want a juice box and some string cheese?
Do you really have that?
Yes. That's one of my favorite lines.
Which is the proper response.
Yeah.
I mean, I would take it. If someone came in here and offered that to me.
Oh, I'd take it in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Of course. Don't joke about that.
I feel like I'm fine being taunted as long as I'm being fed also.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's generally my rule. Anyways, so they do get the suit, right? That happens? They're right. They get the suit.
They do.
Yeah.
They find it.
All right. So he's a little chimp man. And then we learn, Caitlin, do you want to talk about Scott and Hope? Because you seem very eager to talk about that.
Oh my God. We already knew about all of this beforehand,
but
were actually paying attention.
All right, just go. Continue. Tell them about it.
So the reason that Hope is pissed at Scott, for good reason, is that he took the Ant-Man suit to go help Cap in Germany without asking anyone, without telling anyone.
That part, we knew.
And he went by himself and didn't bring Hope with him. And she is convinced that if she had gone with him, he would never have been caught, which is true because she is badass.
Isn't it strange, though, that she's upset that, like, you didn't let me do crimes with you?
No, because that is the proper response.
I think, like, I understand being like, hey, that was BS that you went, that you didn't tell us and you took this my dad's life work with you.
Right.
Like, I get that. But then being like, I wanted to do crimes, too.
That's true friendship right there, though. That's true love.
I don't know.
That's if you're going to get in trouble, I'm going to get in the equal amount of trouble. We're going to do this together.
Look, I just don't think she's looking out for herself.
I felt like she thought they had, an understanding. They'd gotten to a point. They were working together. They're becoming partners. We had already seen him making out. They were doing, as he says, other things. They were like a team. And then he gets like the football team ask him, yo, we need you. And, with Cap, and he just left, didn't even tell her and, left out. That's what's interesting about this movie, though, is because the stakes are so much actually higher in the first one.
Right.
And in this one, there is no evil, especially coming off of Thanos. And it was smart, I think, of them to do that, because how could you compare? It's just a lot of antagonists with agendas.
This is the deep breath that you take after going through Avengers Infinity War, and you go to the theater and you go, oh, wait, no, that was fun.
Yeah, it's a romp, and it's feels good to laugh again. And then it's, and then they remind you at the end of this, it's, oh, wait, no, don't get too happy.
What do you think about, like, Sonny Birch? He just wants to be dirty and make money, right? He has no, like, world domination plans.
I think he's just a criminal.
He's a moron, but he's Walton Goggins.
So good.
Who I just can't watch in anything now without wanting him to be the Joker. I want a Walton Goggins Joker. I want it bad. But he just has that swagger. It's a weird small part, and he gets a lot of screen time, but because it's Walton Goggins, I don't care.
It's strange. He calls the FBI, too. He's like, hey, I'm a criminal. Here's some other criminals.
I mean, between him, Hannah John Common, and Randall Park, it's like an embarrassment of character actor riches.
Yes, Randall Park is great in this. How about at the beginning when he's like, hey, how did you do that trick?
Yeah, and the runner of the close-up magic is brilliant, and so much
incredible.
More so than I thought. So I didn't remember there was as much of it throughout. That both Bobby Cannavale and Randall Park are really interested in that. Forget about the shrinking suit and everything, but how did you do that card trick?
It's like peak dad.
Yeah.
His peak, like, just pure and trying to be cool, but so very clearly not.
It's also a great way to illustrate how outmatched the government and the FBI is. You know, like, the cops and the FBI can't even figure out a hand magic trick. So instead of them being like, what, how'd you get big and small again? Like, no one really understands that, but they can't even get hand magic. Then, after that, we've learned about Bill, we learned about the ghost, we learned about the ghost and Bill. So Bill wants to cure Ava by taking some quantum energy out of Janet, which is, I'm not a math, I'm not a physics guy, but basically he wants to risk Janet's life to save this young girl.
Which I think he never saw it as being something that would actually kill Janet necessarily.
Right.
It would just absorb a little bit of something from her. And I guess his reasoning might be that she'd be willing to help a young woman who's in pain.
It's like a organ transplant.
Right.
And Hank's not going to take the risk.
He is such a
sick
of the mud.
If we go through all of this and getting her back after all these years, you're not touching her.
Yeah.
Forget it.
He'd rather put her in a glass cage and just never let her out ever again kind of thing.
It's great with these movies when the science doesn't make total sense, so you just have to trust them.
Well, I think it's Scott says in this movie, he says,
do you guys just put the word quantum in front of everything?
Yeah. One of the best lines.
Yeah, and I just buy it. It's
right.
Apparently physicists are like, no, the shrinking is impossible. It would bust. I'm like, but PIM particles are also not a thing.
Sure, sure.
You know, it's you know, the Tesseract is not a thing.
It's just funny that the idea that, you know, he doesn't want to help anybody and just doesn't give anybody, the opportunity to. He's a very controlling guy.
Oh, yeah.
Hank?
Yeah.
He could change the world. He could help the world, but... I
think he doesn't trust that the world knows how to... You know, he says he keeps the technology behind because he's like, they just misuse it. They turn it into weapons. And you see, what the world has done with Stark.
Sure.
Stark Tech, who's much more irresponsible.
That's a good point.
And he's like, I think he just doesn't... This is a power that the world isn't ready for, that they can't be trusted with, and I'm just going to keep it for myself and have ants put sugar in my tea instead. And, you know, instead of, you know, who knows? But then there's the other side is maybe it could cure disease or, know, there's, who knows?
Like T'Challa, right?
Yeah, he might not be the only, it's like what could Shuri, for example, do with the PIM particle if she was, you know, knew that was a thing? She probably does already, but it's like.
Yeah, she's smart.
Who knows?
Well, I mean, that's the ending of Black Panther, right? You need to open up a little bit.
Yeah, you need to share the... I mean, Shuri is now apparently out there in the world, you know, even though we now know that she's snapped RIP, but for a period of time, she was out there in the world actually acting as the science ambassador.
Yeah.
The technology and science exchange between the rest of the world and
Wakanda. The ending of that movie when she, shows up and the kids see there, that's, the best. Yeah. Black Panther, speaking
she's
of.
She's so cool.
It's full circle.
Yeah.
Starting there, ending there. It's perfect.
It's interesting. Now we can do a little fan fiction here. She ends up in the bay at the end of Black Panther. That's where Hank Pym is, based in the bay. I wonder if they had any sort of correspondence.
I would hope so.
If Hank shows up, in Endgame, it would be very cool if he was oh, hi, Shuri. And he was oh, hey, Hank. You know, and they're they've been in contact this whole time. So you find Janet.
It's like a one-off.
Yeah, we found Janet. Oh, thank God. Hi, Janet. Oh, I've heard so much about you. It's like, when did they become friends?
I want to see him condescend to her as if she's not smart and then just hurt, rip him apart.
She's really good at that.
Yeah, that's what I want to see. That's my fan fiction. Anyways, after this scene, that's when we have, the most iconic scene of all these movies are the flashback scenes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Truth Serum.
Absolutely.
Those scenes, those are the absolute best.
Well, as he loves to get into, what's the line?
You put a dime in him, you got to let the whole song play out.
He's like human jukebox.
It's one of the highlights of the first one, and I'm so happy they brought it back for this one, especially because in this time you saw Evangeline Lilly and Paul Rudd saying his things, but saying it as Michael Pena, especially Evangeline Lilly,
yeah,
says it like Michael Pena would say it. And it's, I didn't count them as lines because technically it's still Michael Pena talking, but it was, it's just that, that idea that of the sequence taken to the next level.
Yeah.
It's like that, like Drunk History's version of that, where someone's saying it and then they have to act out the exact.
Especially like as they're kissing.
That's
great. Describing that.
And she's back in that old way. Yeah. He's like, and she had this hair and it was weird.
And I like that also that like he says, where is he? And he takes it as, where is he emotionally? Which is great.
And no, they stop him and he goes back. Well, I'm telling you, he's in a complicated place. And they're like, oh my God. It's like.
And I kind of love that Sonny Burch is like, you know, I like a story as much as anyone. As like he's not like that annoyed about it. He's like, no, I get what you're saying here. Like he's almost bemused by the whole thing.
And that's when he met Hope, and Hope's all like,
I want nothing to do with you. Look at my hairdo. I'm all business. And then Scotty's like, you know what, girl? My heart is all broken, and I'll probably never find love again, but damn if I want to kiss you.
That's and then they bring out, what you call it? They bring out the Morrissey part, which is my favorite part of the entire movie. It's very true. Latin community loves Morrissey. So he's talking about his abuelita, who has the bar, and they play Morrissey songs only.
Yeah.
Oh, my abuelita had a jukebox in a restaurant. Yeah, only played Morrissey. And if anybody ever complained, she'd be like, oh, no te gusta más? You know, Chicanos, we call them más. Then adios. What can I say? You know, we relate to his melancholy ballads, you know?
That is my favorite line in the movie. We'll talk about favorite lines a little bit later, but that part, because it's very, very, very true in Southern California and in, like, amongst the Latin American community. Mexico loves Morrissey.
Mm.
He sells out tours all the time. My favorite line in the entire movie. So then, after that, basically, this is a real linchpin of the scene, because he ends up telling Sonny Burch under the... You know, strength of
the non-truth serum.
The non-truth serum, which
is
great.
Truth serum, yeah,
the arbitration of that is great. Just the debate over whether it's truth serum or not. I think that's what makes these movies a little bit different. You know, it's funny because like Hannah John Kamen does this long, long, long monologue, and it's the only kind of straightforward, other than like Hank talking about the past monologue we ever hear. I think in these movies, like expository monologues, because all of them, and that's not undercut by some kind of comedy. Because all of these, no matter what the monologue is, no matter what the exposition is, it's undercut.
It manages to give the movie stakes, but they're personal stakes. You know, for she's not evil, but she has these personal stakes. Mm-hmm. The stakes are to get Janet back, you know, is the quest. And those are personal. It's not, it's one of the only of these movies that's not like galactic cataclysm is on the line, or even just a city, or Hydra's going to get these weapons. Like the stakes are personal here. And I think that's what really makes it stand out and gives it a lot of heart.
The whole thing is like, let's find this old lady.
Yeah. And it's, you know, for one reason or another, they're all just trying to find Michelle Pfeiffer. Aren't we all, you know? So it's, and I really, after Infinity War, like, cause how do you get bigger than that? It was the perfect way to follow that up.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so from there on, so the great thing is like we end up, Luis is able to talk to Scott and get him back at his home so he doesn't get caught. And once again, Randall Park is foiled. And we can go for that. I feel like we shouldn't give away. Should we talk about the entire movie? Like, what should we? You know, I feel like Janet shows up eventually. They catch her. You know, it's all the good stuff. Let's just go to the final big climactic moment.
There's
the chase.
There's a couple. Yeah. There's some important things that happen.
Yeah. So why don't you recap them for us? The big chase downtown with a giant ant and all that good stuff.
Oh, that's really good.
Yeah.
Because he gets stuck like that for a while, mm-hmm. as his suit has been, you know, freaking out and making him small in the elementary school, and then giant out in the world. He ends up using a flatbed truck as like a hot toy to roam around the city. He eventually gets back the little building that Walter Goggins has been, you know, keeping away from him, has to track him down. And Hope ends up saving him after he passes out, because as we know, as we learn from Civil War, anytime he goes really huge, he passes out about 2 minutes later.
Yeah, it was great. Remember the scene with Bill Foster? He's like, yeah, I slept for like 3 days. He's like, yeah, he's so, the great thing about Paul Rudd in this role is that he's so enthusiastic about everything.
Yeah.
You know, like this whole thing is just fun to him.
He's just delightful to watch. I can't think of any other word. It's like he's just happiness.
I think the reason that this movie does so well is because they realized that people wanted to watch Hope be cool and a badass, and then they wanted, you know, Paul Rudd to just be Paul Rudd. They just wanted him to be charming and, you know, funny and kind of be the little bit of a butt of a joke.
Yeah.
But in the best, most delightful way.
I don't think he feels that there's many stakes. I mean, I guess he cares about Hope now, right?
Yeah. Like he cares about Hope. He cares about Cassie.
Right. Those are the only two things he cares about, though. Like, he doesn't. I guess he wants to seem a little bit cool. He calls him Cap. He, you know, he's trying to show off a little bit.
He wants to be one of the guys.
He can't help himself but to have fun doing this. It's not like a grave responsibility.
He's a dork.
No, it's not like with great power comes blah, blah, blah. It's like it's always about his daughter.
Right.
And now probably Hope.
Right, yeah.
And other than that, you know, helping out, being good, not going to jail again.
I feel like after Endgame, other than Thor, who I really love, because I don't know if he's going to survive. All the other ones, we know there's going to be another Black Panther. We know there's going to be another Spider-Man. There's going to be another Guardians of the Galaxy. I love Thor and his crew, Korg and all that. Yeah. I'd be fine getting rid of all these side characters and whatever and just kind of starting fresh with an MCU. Like, I don't need to see, like...
Blasphemy.
I don't need to see, like, I don't know. Even when, like, Falcon pops up in the first Ant-Man, I was like, oh, God, whatever. And I like Anthony Mackie, but I'm like, let's just get fresh faces in there. You know, we don't need to keep bringing back these old people.
I mean...
They've done their job. I didn't dislike them, but I'm like, do I really care about Hannah John Kamen's Ava?
I do.
Star?
Yeah.
Why?
Because it's Hannah John Kamen.
No, I mean, I'm like, don't dislike her. I'm just saying, like, let's give me new stories and people.
Because there's more to her story. Anyway. Yeah.
All right. And in any case, then we have the finale, which is the great fight down San Francisco, which is fun. And then that brings us to the very end of the movie.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Anyways, let's talk about our favorite scenes in the movie. Mine is, I mean, everyone loves the Luis recap, other two serum.
The jukebox.
Yeah, I also just love the one in the school. Like, that's so much fun to me with, like, chimp-sized Scott. And I've expressed that. So what do you guys think?
I have to agree about the truth serum because that had me laughing the whole time. It's not fair for me to just say the entire chase because that's such a long scene. If I had to pick a second one, it would probably be Wasp's first big action scene. But if I'm being honest, it's truth serum with the Louise story.
Sure.
And the addendum of the payoff later where he's like, it is truth serum, and you know. So
the roundabout is great. I'd say my favorite scene is probably when Michelle Pfeiffer takes over Scott Lang's body.
It's not the reunion I'd imagined. It's all so rushed. You two have done such great work. You just need a little nudge.
And then Paul Rudd has to mimic the way that character would play that moment.
Right.
And he reaches over and he's holding Hank Pym's hand. And the visual of that is so great because Hank just cannot stand Scott.
Right.
And so this idea that his lovely wife, who has been gone for decades, is all of a sudden inside the brain of this kid that he thinks is a complete idiot is just absolutely fantastic.
Or just seeing Hope getting all emotional with him.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's so weird because
she's
like,
she's so mad at him right then, too.
She's so mad at him, but she also loves him, but it's her mom.
It's her mom. There's just a lot of layers
there.
That'll
put you in therapy right there.
And it's really funny, and Paul Rudd is just delightful, and he can do anything.
And once it's back, he sees they're holding hands, and he doesn't even say anything. He just has this look to the hand.
Yeah.
He's like, why are we holding? He doesn't say anything.
Why are we
brilliant look, and then it just cuts away immediately. It's after the, yep, didn't work, guys. Sorry, we just had a 10-minute sequence.
What's great is that Paul Rudd, he looks no different than he did in the original Ant-Man. You can see, like, people, you can track their changes over time, but he looks like he just continued filming. They just kept the movie going.
Well, I mean, his 50th birthday was just a couple days ago, and everyone was, you know, doing the whole, there's no way he's 50. But it's also his job to look handsome, and he's
right.
Paid a lot of money to do that.
But, like, some people, like Leonardo DiCaprio, you can tell he's gotten older.
Right.
Right? Like, still a handsome guy, but much different.
Good genes.
Best lines of the movie.
Ooh.
other than obviously Luis's.
I have one that made me laugh out. That's made me laugh out loud every time I've watched it. And okay. it's towards the end. It's Wu's final scene with Scott, and they're saying, "I'll see you around." And then it's like, "Why will you see me around?" Yeah. He's like, "Well, you know, because you're going to break the law again." It's like, "What are you intending dinner?" And they have this thing. It's like, "Are we going to hang out or something?" And they go through that whole conversation, and it's over. The conversation was over, and Randall Park steps away for a split second and then turns back and he says,
"Did you want to grab dinner or something? I mean, because I'm free. Yeah, come on."
And then it's like earnestly, like he actually does want to go, like, if this guy was up for it, I would, you know, hang out.
He wants to be friends.
It's just really lonely. And he's like, now that it's so perfect. It reminds me of the juice box line a little bit, because it's subversive and it's not what you expect. And it's also just the way that Park sells it. It's just perfection. If I had to choose, that's mine.
I'd say mine is, it's the dumbest thing, and it makes me laugh every time when he's trying to, you know, go off and be heroic, and he's summoning all of the flying ants to come and get him, and the seagulls come by and snatch each one of them over and over again, and he just yells at them, "Murderers!"
I'm going to call you Antonio Banderas!
The ant puns are so good.
It is, and the thing for me is, like, I love, obviously, we're going to talk about that scene where the truth serum stuff, and I just love the thing about the grandmother and the Moz thing. I know we said this camp, you know, we already talked about the truth serum thing, but she's like, anybody ever complains? She's like, "Oh, no te gusta Moz? You know, we Chicanos call him Moz. Then adios. What can I say? You know, we relate to this melancholy ballads, you know?" Beyond that, it's just so good. I love anything Walton Goggins says to Sonny Birch. He's like, "My chandelier." He's so upset about that early on.
My turn of the century chandelier. But I also will point out, I remember, Jordan, when we went and saw this movie when it first came out, we talked about this. This was the first thing that we talked about when we came out of the movie. And it was the line where Scott has had the vision where Hope is... as a little kid, and she's hiding in the wardrobe.
Is it in a wardrobe?
No, it was in a tall dresser.
You mean a wardrobe?
Is that what that's called?
That was the first thing Jordan and I talked about when we came out of that movie.
Doesn't she follow it as, like, did it have horses on it? He's like, "Yeah, how do you know so much about, you know, tall things you take clothes out of?" Something, some kind of thing like that. I forget what the exact line is.
Oh, God, I love it. I love that so much. Let's talk about the director. This is the director's chair segment of it. The first Ant-Man, Peyton Reed took over for Edgar Wright in development. And so everyone's watching this movie and seeing, what is Edgar Wright's? What is Peyton Reed's? What is Edgar Wright's? What is Peyton Reed's? The movie gets good reviews. People like it. And you can see the little shreds of Edgar Wright there. But there's just kind of, who owns this movie, right? This question mark hanging over it. Even though Peyton Reed gets full credit, Edgar Wright pulled out. No one's, you know, saying that, you know, that Edgar Wright's ideas really survive much into it. It's clear it's Peyton Reed's movie, but still questions remain, right? Because people love Edgar Wright. So this movie was kind of his moment to be like, "Hey, look, not only was the first Ant-Man all me, I can show you that by kind of reproducing it and making it better in the second movie." And I think he really puts a stamp on this movie. It's very clear that it's a Peyton Reed movie. And I think now we actually know what a Peyton Reed movie looks like, because he's done so many different things. This is kind of the first time he's repeated himself. And so I think this is like, at 50 years old, Peyton Reed kind of has his big breakout. You know, we know what he is as a director now.
It was interesting, because with the first movie was a really pleasant surprise to me, because I wasn't expecting much, because, again, got caught up and was like, was disappointed it wasn't Edgar Wright, because I'm a huge Edgar Wright fan. Mm-hmm. And then I just, somewhere around the briefcase fight, where they're fighting inside the briefcase, and I forget the song that comes on.
Right.
The
song. Was what you call it?
The song to which you are referring is called Disintegration by The Cure.
Yeah, yeah. And I realized I was smiling really big, and I'm like, I've been smiling this entire movie. Like, I have not stopped.
Right. Yeah.
And I walked out of the movie, and I'm like, what a surprise. It was so much fun. It was such a fun experience. And I wasn't expecting that. I loved it so much more, and I thought it was so inventive. So with this one, I was prepped, you know, to kind of, for not necessarily more of the same, but to see what else they could do with that. And I think he, you know, whatever amalgam he ended up landing on in that, in terms of, you know, Edgar working on story, I don't know if any of Edgar's shot concepts or anything made it through there, but whatever that was, you know, survived intact, and it really felt like taken to the next level with what, also with Civil War in there too. It's like, what other inventive things can you do with this power? It's like Civil War really, I think, showed you a little more of what to do with that, at least with Ant-Man. And in this one, you know, the Wasp, theoretically, what, all the action she does, that's all Peyton Reed.
Right.
And he nails that. Like, the action with Wasp and Ghost when they're fighting in a car, it's like, it's fantastic. You know, so it's, I feel like he's truly made it his in this one.
And I think he's proven that he, more than most of the other directors in the MCU, arguably, is capable of making a very good standalone film.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Like, you walk out of that movie, and I know that if I were to take someone to, like, have someone watch Ant-Man and the Wasp, who maybe has never seen another Marvel movie, doesn't necessarily care about it, they'd still enjoy themselves, and they wouldn't have to know the context of the other movies around mm-hmm. it necessarily to enjoy themselves or follow the narrative that is existing within this movie.
And it's not even like a Falcon scene in there, in this one.
Right.
Where it's like, oh, here's the back. It's like, there's really none of that.
It's very standalone, except for the end credit scene.
I'm trying to snap into the microphone. It's not working.
It's not working.
Is that a spoiler? Yes, it is. All right. So, and the last thing I want to say about Peyton Reed is he can direct action. Never really did it much before, but he can direct. And these are some complicated action sequences. Yeah. Sure, a lot of them are CGI-ish, but as a director, you're still overseeing
that. You're still making sure that everything is making sense within the language of the fight.
And inventive, like a tiny little car, you know, inventive and funny at the same time, you know, while still keeping the stakes of the action. It's very clever.
All right, let's go to the post-credit scene. Let's explain why you were snapping. So, at the end of this movie.
At the end of this movie, we see that the Ant-Man team is working to access the quantum realm with a smaller quantum tunnel that actually fits in the back of a van now, which is pretty cool. Could have been useful the first time around, but I guess maybe their technology caught up with however much time is between the actual Ant-Man and the Wasp and the end credit scene. But Scott goes into the quantum realm via this tiny new tunnel to collect some quantum energy to give to Hannah John Kamen's ghost so that they can continue to heal her. So we know, as far as all that she's doing good and they're helping her. He gathers the energy pretty quickly, and then he gives the signal that he's ready to come back, and silence from the radio. And before, outside, it had been Hank, Janet, and Hope all just kind of hanging out, waiting for him to come back, and
healing particle secured for our new ghost friend.
Great. Preparing for re-entry in 5, 4, 3.
Hello?
Guys. Okay, seriously, don't joke around. Bring me up. Let's go. Guys!
We cut to outside the quantum realm again, and all we see is some ash floating in the air.
It is so funny to me that Janet got caught up in the snap.
After all that work.
Or ran away when she saw it happen.
Oh, but, yeah. She could have been like, I got to get out of here.
Yeah.
That's true.
And she flies away.
But so understandably, they were all caught up in Thanos' snap. They were half of the universe that got just erased.
Terrible math for that family, huh?
No kidding.
All three?
Yeah.
Well, it's like similar to the Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, they were all taken out except for Rocket, and all of Team Ant-Man was taken out except for Ant-Man.
Do you think some families just didn't lose anyone during the snap?
I'd like to think so. There's like one family that's like,
hey,
like,
guys, what's everyone upset about?
I want to know if Cassie's okay.
That's a great point.
I really want to know if Cassie's okay. I was worried about that.
I mean, I bet you she's not, because there's no reason for Scott to do anything if she's fine.
I think there is. I think Scott, he'd be a little bit.
If Cap was in trouble, he'd like, he'd second only to Cassie, it's like, Cap needs me, what? And he'll like, go to there. Wherever he thinks he is.
I wonder if maybe like tweens don't die. Like if Thanos is like, let's have the new generation survive. Maybe he just got rid of old people. I guess Shuri's in trouble, so maybe not.
He hasn't had.
Peter Parker.
Yeah. I mean, it's true. He's not a tween,
though. He hasn't had problems killing children in the past.
That's true, and including his own children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not a good dad, Thanos.
He's talking. Speaking of bad dads, yeah, he's kind of worse.
Here we go into the last section of this little podcast, where we talk about what does this movie how does it feed into Endgame? And I think there's a lot here, but it's basically that, you know, there's a lot of little things, but the big thing, obviously, Scott Lang survives the snap.
And is stuck in the quantum realm.
Right. Mm-hmm. But not the whole time.
Well, we don't know how he gets out yet.
Right.
There's a lot of theories about it.
We see him in the trailer.
Right.
But we also know they shot fake material.
Did they put fake material
fake
in the trailer?
Shots. They've said there are many shots in the trailer that are not in the movie.
That is psychotic.
Because they hate us.
Yeah. So we don't, the last we saw him, he's in the quantum realm. I think Walton Goggins could potentially get him out.
Caitlin, when you went to go see scenes from the movie at the junket, I know they put one online.
Yeah.
Did they put the other one online?
Ant-Man, no.
Did they make you sign an embargo for that scene?
Yes.
Wow. That's amazing. All right. So I'm not going to ask you about it. So Caitlin went to the junket and she saw some little extra stuff.
Can she say exactly what it was?
No, I think she signed.
But I can tell you that Ant-Man was not in it.
Oh, okay.
Well, maybe he was, but he was really tiny.
And he was really tiny. It's like on all the posters.
That's true.
He's on the posters where no one could find him.
Yes. Remember those posters? And they'd be really small.
Yes.
The posters
were
good.
Ant-Man is on every single movie poster ever made.
Since Iron Man.
Since Iron Man.
They've been planning this.
All righty. So Ant-Man and the Wasp, I think we can all say, for us, if we were Rotten Tomatoes, it'd be fresh, right?
I love this movie. I have yet to come across it. I mean, I'm an enthusiast, but I have honestly yet to come across an MCU movie that I would even remotely consider rotten in any way.
See, I did the podcast for Dark World, and I haven't rewatched it yet. I liked it better the second time. I enjoyed it.
It's a grower. Definitely a grower, not it. But I mean, I think there's so much fun with that movie.
Yes.
I think the movie gets a bad rap.
I agree. I'm a Dark World. I'm not going to say I'm a fan, but I'm a supporter.
Yeah.
Ant-Man and the Wasp, meanwhile,
much better than Dark World.
Oh, it was
much
higher.
Better, yeah. But sure. I don't think I've ever met anyone who was like, yeah, I didn't really like it. It was fine. Everyone that I've ever talked to was like, yeah, it's a good movie. It's fun. It's funny.
Well, why don't we ask Warvis how the rest of Sci-Fi Wire staff felt about it? Because we did a little survey and we asked amongst ourselves, which movies, how do we rank the Marvel movies is what we asked. And so why don't we ask Warvis how we as a group ranked this movie.
In Sci-Fi Wire's official ranking of the MCU, Ant-Man and the Wasp ranks 17 out of 21, just ahead of Thor and behind Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
17?
17.
17 is too low. Wow.
Warvis.
Higher.
It's not Warvis's fault. Don't kill a messenger.
I'm kind of going to blame the messenger. I don't know.
Hey, don't blame the messenger here. I'm just reporting on what Sci-Fi Wire decided as a subjective opinion. That said, that opinion is wrong.
I'm kind of curious what's, below it, for one thing.
Yeah.
I'm sure people are throwing Iron Man 2 down there, which is travesty. Incredible Hulk, I'll tell you, I love Incredible Hulk now. You know why? Because Edward Norton's Bruce Banner doesn't talk a lot.
He doesn't do a lot of notes.
And he's the only, outside from Stark having five lines in it, it was a really easy one to notate down. So that's like my new favorite. But I mean, it's probably Dark World and Iron Man 2. Everyone throws those,
Yeah, I know that Dark World is like 21 out of 22.
What's wrong with our coworkers that Ant-Man and the Wasp is 17?
I think this shows the strength of the MCU. There's been a lot of good movies, but there's no way that Guardians of the Galaxy 2 or is anywhere near as good as this.
I just did the podcast for Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, and I think I like Ant-Man and the Wasp better than I like Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
We are aghast at this ranking.
I am perplexed.
Once again, officially do not support the Sci-Fi Wire ranking.
I do. I join in the honorable delegate across from me in her denouncement of this ranking.
The next staff meeting is going to be hell.
I mean, what's number one? Infinity War, is that number one?
Black Panther.
Black Panther's number one?
All That's right. fair.
That's good.
It's fair. I don't agree with it.
All right. Well, any extra thoughts about this movie before we wrap it up?
No, I think the we covered the important things, which are Quantum Realm.
Mm-hmm.
Ant-Man is the only remaining member of Team Ant-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And Endgame is going to ruin all of our lives.
Truth Serum, too.
Truth Serum.
I think assuming they bring them back, I think Janet and her quantum realm powers are going to be key.
Vital in
some way.
I agree.
I think, bringing her back was maybe a bigger picture thing.
All right. Well,
also Michelle Pfeiffer. So like,
well, subscribe, listen to all of them. We have like 20 previous podcasts for you to listen to about all about the MCU. If you download them like the day before you go see Endgame, you can listen to them all and then go see Endgame
and not sleep.
What
beforehand.
Better way to spend that day?
There's no better.
I mean, I can't imagine a better way.
Absolutely.
With your new friends.
With all of us new friends.
And there's one episode after this one, before Endgame, and that is a little movie called Captain Marvel. Made a few dollars.
Kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
Flurkin.
And then once you see Endgame and you survive, you know, you've blown your nose and you've wiped away your tears and you've called your parents and, you know, you've eaten a hearty lunch because I'm sure it's a very long movie, so you need to recharge.
It's 3 hours.
Yes.
Eat some shawarma.
Yeah, eat some shawarma in honor of potentially some fallen people. Then go back to your podcast provider of choice, or just go onto your iPhone where, if you're subscribed, you'll get it automatically and listen to our episode about Avengers Endgame.